Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And Hippoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Prem Ki Jai. Sri Sri Dadha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 62, Text Number 11 through Text Number 16, chanting the Sanskrit for Text Number 11. Satatra tama pasyanti kavasi kante tivandini shakinam maja utsaso vivala vridita brisham satatra tama pasyanti Vashikante ti vandavadini Shakinam madhya utshasto Vivala vridita brisham Satatra tama pasyanti Vashi kante ti vadini Shakinam madhya uttashto Vivala vridita brisham Ladies. Sa, she, tatra, there in her dream, tam, him, apashyanti, not seeing, kva, where, Asi, are you? Kunta, my lover. Iti, thus. Vadini, speaking. Shakinam, of her girlfriends. Madhye, in the midst. Utashto, arose. Vivala, disturbed. Vridita, embarrassed. Brisham, greatly. Translation. Losing sight of her in her dream, losing sight of him in her dream, Usha suddenly sat up in the midst of her girlfriends, crying out, "Where are you, my lover?" She was greatly disturbed and embarrassed. Please repeat. Losing sight of him in her dream, Usha suddenly sat up in the midst of her girlfriends, crying out, "Where are you, my lover?" She was greatly disturbed and embarrassed. Coming to her senses and remembering that she was, coming to her senses and remembering that she was surrounded by her girlfriends, Usha was naturally very embarrassed to have cried out in that way. At the same time, she was disturbed by attachment to the beloved man who had appeared in her dream. Text 12. Banasura had a minister named Kumbhanda, whose daughter was Chitraleka, a companion of Usha's. She was filled with curiosity, and thus she inquired from her friend. Text 13. Chitraleka said, "Who are you searching for, O fine-browed one? What is this hankering you're feeling? Until now, O princess, I haven't seen any man take your hand in marriage." Text 14. Usha said, "In my dream, I saw a certain man who had a dark blue complexion, lotus eyes, yellow garments, and mighty arms. He was the kind who touches a woman's heart." Text 15. "It is that lover I search for. After making me drink the honey of his lips, he has gone elsewhere, and thus he has thrown me, hankering fervently for him, into the ocean of distress." And text 16. Chitraleka said, "I will remove your distress. If he is to be found anywhere in the three worlds, I will bring this future husband of yours who has stolen your heart. Please show me who he is." Interestingly, the name Chitraleka indicates a person who is skilled in the art of drawing or painting. Chitra means excellent or variegated, and Leka means the art of drawing or painting. Chitraleka, as described in the following verse, will now utilize the talent indicated by her name. Omagyana Timidandasya, Jananjana Shalakaya, Chaksu Unmilitamina, Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Maha, Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pandum Lam Jayatirkari, Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarina, Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahivacha, Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha, Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. There was a verse preceding these, text number 6, where Banasura is described with the words kudi and kumati. Kudi meaning bad intelligence, and kumati meaning foolish. This reminded me of a favorite verse of mine from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, wherein the words kukata are used, kukata matikni. It refers to subject matter which has bad words that kill the intelligence. So kukata, bad words. So I was thinking that, the translation for that is very interesting. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the descriptions of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to the talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. This one verse right here really kind of summarizes our morning program, what it's all about, the foundation that we bring to our daily activities in the pursuit of devotional service. We have the, I dare say the word example, of the rest of society. Many of the people that I get up with, by the time they get to work, they may have been up long enough to have gotten themselves into the car and downed a cup of coffee on the way in and maybe a donut or something. And usually look like they just got up that recently. But for the devotee, we have the indication, the instruction, and the desire. We rise much earlier than that. We perform our morning services. We have our sadhana that we execute, because this then gives us the armor that will protect us as we go throughout the rest of our day. We should understand, as we're instructed in many places, that living in the material world as a Vaishnava is like doing battle with the material energy. So a good warrior always has a good suit of armor. So the suit of armor that we put on us is this morning program, this morning sadhana. And depending upon our circumstance, it may be more elaborate or more simple, but it's there. It's always a part of what we do. Rise, shower, engage in japa, hearing, puja, whatever the particular circumstance is, then this is the way that we uplift our consciousness, purify ourselves instead of drag our consciousness down. The non-devotees, their activities are all meant to, as this description of Banasura, kudi, to reinforce their bad intelligence. All the activities they do, kukata, bad words that they speak, which reinforce the intelligence, bring about foolish activities that kill the intelligence. It's matigni. So these are things that we work very hard to protect ourselves against. Having said that, how do we spend our time? Well, Chanakadvan Pandit advises that a wise person spends their time discussing gambling in the morning, discussing the activities of women in the afternoon, and discussing the activities of thievery in the evening. This is Chanaka Pandit advising us how to engage ourselves. Wait a minute, we're trying to uplift and purify ourselves. So he goes on to explain that the activity of gambling means to discuss the Mahabharata. Because King Yudhishthira, of course, is engaged in this gambling circumstance, which is the pivotal direction of how the Mahabharata develops. And the discussion of the activities of ladies in the afternoon, this means to discuss the activities of Sita, the wife of Ramchandra, as described in the Ramayana. And then finally, the activities of thievery. In the evening, we spend our time discussing the pastimes of Krishna as he steals butter, steals the hearts of his devotees, steals the clothes of the gopis like this. So in this way, we discuss these three topics for the purpose of directing and purifying our lives. But Banasura, we see he can add this ku to his name too. Kudi, kumati, and kukata. He's all engaged in so many bad things. Now, I wanted to back up a minute here to yesterday's verse, because this particular direction that the chapter now turns to is very, very important to understand how it fits in with the purport of yesterday. I just want to read through it very briefly here. The incidents now described will lead up to the fight predicted by Lord Shiva. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from the Vishnu Purana, which explain Usha's dream. O Brahmana, when Usha, the daughter of Bana, happened to see Parvati playing with her husband, Lord Shambhu, Usha intensely desired to experience those same feelings. At that time, Goddess Gauri, Parvati, who knows everyone's heart, told the sensitive young girl, "Don't be so disturbed. You will have a chance to enjoy with your own husband." Hearing this, Usha thought to herself, "But when?" First question, but when? You can just hear the enthusiasm she would have asked it with. And who will my husband be? In response, Parvati addressed her once more. The man who approaches you in your dream on the 12th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Vaishakha will become your husband, O princess. Not only does Parvati tell her, oh, you'll have a dream. You'll have a dream on this day, at this particular stage of the moon, and this is what will happen. So this is very important because this explains how it was that Usha had this dream. And then in this dream, Aniruddha came. So the reason why one might inquire, well, I mean, there's so many young girls. How is it that Usha happened to get this darshan, first of all, of Parvati and Shiva, and then second of all, get this blessing from her? Well, like her father, Manasura, Usha was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. That's what they say, the daughter takes the qualities of the father, the son takes the qualities of the mother. So the worship, she had a particular Shiva lingam that she worshipped very, very nicely. And this allowed her the opportunity to have the darshan of Shiva and Parvati. And Parvati, appreciating very much her mood of devotion and appreciating her worship of the Lord Shiva, gave her this benediction because she could see, oh, this girl is very desirous of having this type of relationship. Not in a lusty way, she's looking at Shiva and I, but she wants this in her life. So don't worry, you'll get like that. So she assures her in that way. So this was part of the qualification. And this blessing from Parvati would bring some solace to the life of Usha, because Usha had a very restrictive life. I mean, she's extremely beautiful, extremely qualified, and as a result, there were a lot of suitors. And many of them approached to be able to attain her hand in marriage. Unlike many fathers, Bonasura was not so interested in any of them. They didn't meet the mark. What's that? No man is good enough for my daughter. Fortunately, I don't have to say that anymore. But there is, he wasn't satisfied. But he was concerned that she may become corrupted or polluted or taken advantage of. So he locked her up in a fortress, a fire fortress. It was called Agnigrah. This place that she was kept was surrounded by fire. Now, we know that Lord Shiva protected the city of Manasura. And where Lord Shiva is there, he doesn't just go by himself. He's got his two right-hand soldiers, his sons Kartikeya and Ganesh. So they were all there, and they're very good friends with Agni. So this is the group that's protecting Manasura city. So Agni arranged for this fire fortress in which Usha and her girlfriends were kept. And this is why described, she never went anywhere, didn't go out, you know, didn't see anybody, didn't have any exchange with other men like that. So in this way, the city of Santapur, as described here in the Bhagavatam, was very well protected, and equally so, Bonasura arranged that his daughter would be well protected. An interesting point about the city of Santapur, I did a little research to find out where it's located. And there's a number of cities by the name of Santapur, but there's two particular ones that are referred to in this pastime. One of them is in Uttarakhand, and there's it's just in the foothill areas of the Himalayas. And it's said that actually in this there's a temple there of Omkimath, and this is where Usha and Aniruddha were supposed to have been married after this whole incident takes place. A famous thing the city's known for also is that Lord Kedarnath, when Kedarnath and Badrinath, they close during the winter, he goes to reside in this particular place. So this is one of the places noted. However, there seems to be more evidence, if you look into this, there seems to be more evidence that the city of Bonasura was actually in Assam, which is all the way in eastern, what would have been eastern India at that time. Because there is a city there now that's called, the current name of that city of Santapur is Tezpur, or it means the blood town. And it got its name because the streets of the town became red with the blood from the battle of Bonasura and Krishna. And of course Shiva was involved, and just about everybody in the whole realm of all the demigods was there. And so this is how it became known as the blood town, and then this became the modern name of it. And in that, there's a very large temple at the top of one big hill where Usha and Aniruddha are said to have been married. And there's dioramas all the way up. They're depicting this entire pastime of Banasura and Usha and Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna like this. Plus, it mentions that Banasura was very good friends with the king of Naraka and was actually his neighbor. So Vishnu Purana gives all these explanations like that. So this seems to be the indication. It's one of those, like, sometimes you'll read in Chaitanya Leela, this person was this person, and then you read somewhere else, this person was that person. You know, and so you're never really quite sure. So indication is there, but the latter city seems to be the prominent place. So Banasura, needless to say, had a very well-protected fortress. So back to the point of Parvati getting these blessings, in spite of being locked away like this in this fortress of fire, Parvati assures her, don't worry, you'll also get love. Because this is what she's desiring. She's a young girl and very much hankering after that, finding an established relationship and being settled like that. So then that brings us up to today's verse. As I was looking over this verse, the first word that popped out, those of us, the pujaris among us, will notice this word, utishto. The form of utishta, utishta, we address the deities. Utishta, tishta, Sri Guru, utishta, sista, Sri Krishna. Wake up, my Lord. So this is the description given here of Usha. She's laying very quietly, and then she wakes up suddenly. We've all had this experience of waking up suddenly from a dream. Usually we kind of gradually come out of sleep, but then there's that sudden waking up where something happens, you know. Now, this dream that Usha had, very real and very vivid. You know, we have, Prabhupada gives that classic example of, you know, sometimes in a dream someone's chased by a tiger and they begin screaming in their dream, and, you know, that to them is completely real. They wake up and they're sweating and, oh, you know, like that. But in reality, it didn't really happen. That may not be exactly applicable here. This dream is so real and so vivid, Usha felt it to completely be reality. And this is kind of interesting because, you know, she has a very natural chastity and shyness and a complete lack of mixing with any men. Much unlike today's society, Usha had no association with boys. So there was no opportunity for this to just be another chapter in her endless, you know, mental disturbances. This was something completely out of the common, out of the natural. It wasn't common for her to have this dream, you know, have like this. And so she wakes up very suddenly from this dream with two particular qualities embracing her, it mentions. Disturbed and embarrassed. So she was disturbed, of course, due to the intensity of the dream and her realization that in the midst of this dream and the intensity of it, it suddenly fades. Now, sometimes, you know, you have a dream and it's a really nice dream. Maybe you're engaged in doing some kind of deity worship or you're with some friend or something. Some just really, really a great dream. And then you happen to wake up. It's like, oh, I want to go back to sleep and get that dream again. And it just doesn't happen. I mean, I maybe once in a really rare extreme case, but generally speaking, once that dream's broken, that's it. You're done. Okay, just get up, take a shower, move on with the day because that one's not coming back. So, you know, she was very, very happy with this dream. And, you know, to be woken up so startled like that, you know, to lose the dream, it disturbed her very much. She's very much upset. But she was equally embarrassed. Because as mentioned, she was without any boyfriend, without any husband, to be more precise, at the time period. And to wake up shouting, oh, my lover! All of her girlfriends, you know, she's in the midst of her personal quarters with all of her girlfriends, and there was not yet a lover, you know. So, you know, she was very embarrassed by this display of emotion, of affection for someone that she was not known to be or not thought to be with. We actually see this kind of reaction in the activities of the gopis as well. Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes in many different places where, you know, the gopis would see Krishna and be inclined to him in a particular way and then become very embarrassed. Oh, what if my elders see me acting like this or notice me looking at him in that way? Or, you know, then they would be fearful of the possible detection by their elders of noticing Krishna, and then they would become embarrassed that they have acted. So in this way, actually there was one time Krishna became a little embarrassed noticing the gopis. He was holding up Govardhan Hill, and he happened to be kind of glancing over and making note of the beautiful gopis, and the hill shook a little bit, just a little bit. And all the cowherd boys, they put their sticks up, oh, Krishna needs our help. Now, Balaram looked over, and he knew what Krishna was up to, and he smiled at Krishna, and Krishna saw Balaram and started to come. So this type of embarrassment at a circumstance like this is not uncommon, but it is what we see that she's completely impacted by here. So she wakes up in this way and very embarrassed and calls out, oh, my lover. Now, in the next verse here, verse number 12, this is where Chitralekha is introduced into the picture here. She's the daughter of Kumbhanda, who is one of the main ministers of Banasura. Now, I tried to do a little research on Kumbhanda, and I couldn't find out a whole lot about him except the meaning of his name. The name Kumbhanda has three particular names. It describes one who has a belly like a pot, one for whom the earth is as light as a pot, and one whose, shall we say, certain male anatomy is shaped like a pot. This is from the Sanskrit definition there. So in this way, we see that whatever it is, he was pot-shaped. Kumbhanda was a particularly large individual, and so his daughter, Chitralekha, was the best friend of Usha. Oh, one other thing about Kumbhanda. It's interesting, but I've never engaged in any gaming. I mean, video games. I can honestly say I've never played a video game in my life. But in the gaming world, there's a demoniac personality named Kumbhanda, who's a big evil demon that possesses a fire bomb that he keeps in a big pot. He uses to destroy characters or something. I don't know. Some one of those companies puts those things out. But at any rate, so even in the modern day, he's known in this particular method. So at any rate, the best friend of Usha was his Chitralekha. And Chitralekha actually was a very dear confidant and very close companion and always with Usha and very clearly understood her mind and knew her. Actually, it's interesting that she would know the connection through Parvati with Usha, because it says that in Chitralekha's previous life, she was a heavenly maid servant in the court of Parvati. So there's this kind of connection there, you know. So she would be aware of Usha's blessings by Parvati and therefore be anxious also, like her dear girlfriend, waiting for this dream to come about. And this means that she would know of the activities of Usha's life and the men that were present, or in this case, not present. And so when her dearest, closest friend wakes up from sleeping and calls out, oh, my dear lover, she kind of realizes, all right, wait a minute here. You know, something's out of the ordinary. Maybe this is the incident. So with great curiosity, it describes, she inquires from her friend. And then we move to chapter 13. Now, Chitralekha addresses her friend, and she uses a word here which kind of caught my eye, Shubhru. Shubhru. It means one who has a fine brow, and in particular, a fine eyebrow, one who has beautiful eyebrows. I thought, now this is kind of an unusual compliment. Oh, you have such nice eyebrows. It's not the kind of compliment you usually hear, but if you look in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that complimentary phrase is used 22 times. Mostly it's in the 3rd, 4th, 9th, and 10th cantos. Repeatedly, the compliment is given, oh, you with fine eyebrows. Oh, you with decorated eyebrows. Oh, you with beautiful eyebrows. Like that. What was the other one? Charming. Oh, you with charming eyebrows. So apparently, just like having a sesame seed nose, it's supposed to be a very big compliment to have fine eyebrows. So, in any way, she addresses her like this. And Chitraleka states the obvious. She says, I haven't seen you with any man. And you, she might add as an afterthought, especially since you're in a fortress surrounded by fire. There's no men here. So she's inquiring very curiously, how is this taking place? Now, there's another Sanskrit phrase in this particular verse, verse 13, which I thought was important for us to take note of. Kidrisha te manarata. What kind of hankering do you have? So she's inquiring, what kind of hankering do you have, Usha? And I thought about this. This is a good question we should ask ourselves. What kind of hankering do we have? Do we have a hankering for sense enjoyment? Do we have a hankering for the acquisition of wealth? Do we have a hankering for good grades in school? For a nice spouse? For fame, praise, glorification? Srila Prabhupada, in 1973, when he was lecturing in Bombay, he was speaking from the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And several times during those days, lecturing on that, he referred to the chariot of the mind, Mano Ratena. This is a verse that's taken from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. Describes the one who is driven by their own mental speculations. Prabhupada refers to this also in the Gita, that Mano Ratena, that the type of desires that drive a person. So here the inquiry can be made, what is that drive? What is that type of desire that drives us? Are we absorbed in acquiring material success? Are we looking at material comforts? Or are we driven by something higher, driven by the desire for devotional service, by the desire for purification, by the desire for being absorbed in the remembrance of the pastimes of the Lord? So in this way, Chitraleka inquires from her dear friend, you know, please reveal your mind to me. Tell me exactly what's going on. So then we have verse 14 here. And verse 14 is a very telling verse. It begins to really paint the story here. The description that Usha gives is one that we should all be quite familiar with. Dark blue complexion, lotus eyes, yellow garments, mighty arms. Sounds very familiar to me. I don't know about any of you, but I'm sure it sounds very familiar. So this would sound very much like the description we would read of Lord Krishna. But of course, it wasn't Lord Krishna. Now, the real fact in this verse is that not having had any close contact with men and being out of that loop socially, Usha had a clear idea of who this man was but didn't know how to describe him or to relate who he was. You know, sometimes you'll have a dream about somebody that you may know or you saw or something, and when you wake up, you can recall, oh, that was so-and-so. Yeah, or you tell them, oh, Badahari was in my dreams last night. We went to Kirtan in St. Petersburg somewhere. You know, you can make the correlation. In this case, Usha couldn't make a correlation. She had no point of reference. Who is this man? So she, you know, had realized that whoever it was the image of him was blossoming into true love and affection within her heart. And, of course, this was one of the things that we see quite naturally in a young girl. That when she does come into a relationship with that man who gets her heart, so to speak, you know, that this love and this devotion and this affection begins to blossom. And this is one of the reasons why, as a father, it's very important to carefully support and nurture a daughter so that when she does find that man of her dreams, she's not seeking after someone that will crush her or someone that might spoil her, but instead encourages and nurtures that love that she's already got there. So then we move on to text 15, and Usha, I like this Sanskrit word here, katam rigaye. Usha reveals her mind to Chitraleka with the words, katam rigaye, that lover which I am seeking. So which lover is that? Paya yitva adaram madhu, the one that has made me drink the honey of his lips. And for a young girl that has not had any association with men to speak so poetically means that indeed this dream has really captured her heart. and that she has had the full experience in this dream. Affectionate and amorous exchange with the person of her dream. Therefore, she understands completely. Katam Rigaye, this is the lover that I seek, the one that will make me drink the honey of his lips and steal my heart in this way. You know, she understood clearly what it was that she was looking for in the relationship, and this dream had fulfilled that. So she became very much enchanted in seeing that dream become a reality. Now here again, this is something we can apply to ourselves, how we see our dreams become a reality. We have a dream of becoming fixed in devotional service. We have a dream of being successful in the path of bhakti. So what is our effort to make that a reality? How will we actually achieve that? So this is, you know, the intensity and the focus that we see in Usha as she describes Sister Chitraleka is the same intensity and focus that we hope to achieve in our own life as we pursue the path of devotional service. And so this is a nice example for us as we continue on, even though the particular application in this verse may be different, the principle that's there is what we can extract from it and apply to ourselves. Now, this verse also includes a very particular mood that we find exclusive to the path of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and that is love and separation. This, of course, is the whole soul and mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he exemplified what he understood the mood of the gopis to be. This intensity for wanting to be with the Lord, but at the same time being separated from the Lord. There's actually no other religious tradition where you find the ideology of pain and separation is so prominent and such an important part of the beliefs. So, you know, this principle we see, it extends even much further back than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Here we see that Usha has actually experienced it too. And she uses the word shiptavamam. Shiptamam vrijana narve. He has thrown me into the ocean of distress. I mean, this is exactly how the gopis are speaking when they talk about their feelings of love and separation from Sri Krishna, that they feel this ocean of distress, and this is what we see here in Usha. So she's feeling on one side she's feeling this intense love and attraction and satisfaction, and on the other side she's feeling this great hankering, you know, this hankering that will drive her to want more and more to see this relationship established. And then we come to the final verse of today, verse 16. The nice thing about this verse is it really shows the friendship at its best, if you will. Chitraleka's mood is, okay, you're in distress, you're filled with anxiety, you're desiring something you don't know how to bring into your grasp, you don't know where to turn, but you have the good fortune of having me here and I can fulfill these desires for you. I can see that this gets done. Now, this is really a good friend. I looked it up and there's 12 particular qualities ascribed to one's best friend. Non-judgmental, genuine in the relationship, accepting, trustworthy, respectful, forgiving, supportive, dependable, thoughtful, a good listener, or what we would describe as empathetic, humorous, and to accept us as we are. So these are the 12 qualities of a best friend. Now, Chitraleka particularly, in my observation, possesses in this exchange here, qualities 1, 4, and 8. Non-judgmental, trustworthy, and dependable. We've already described how, you know, Usha has woken up from this dream, not surrounded by men, and speaking in this way that's completely out of the norm. So instead of judge her, oh, what have you been up to, or some kind of condescending, you know, mood, Chitraleka's come, okay, so what do you need? What are you desiring? How can I help fulfill it? And she's very trustworthy. She's not going to go and say anything to anybody, unlike that busybody maidservant who spills the beans on the whole thing. Do you know her name? It was something like Vindulaya or something. It's given somewhere. I tried to find it again, and I came across it and then went back to find it and couldn't. But, you know, she's the maidservant that comes in once Adi Runa comes into the picture and sees him and then immediately runs to Banasura. Hey, guess who's in the other thing? And, you know, so Chitralika is not that type of friend. She's very trustworthy. She's not going to say anything. And she's dependable. She can be counted on. She strongly tells Usha, I will find him and bring him to you. So when you're in distress, when you're in anxiety, when you're hankering for something and your best friend says, don't worry, I'll get it for you, then okay, you don't have anything to worry about. So this is the type of qualities that, you know, you look for. And Chitralika brings these qualities to the relationship with Usha. And she brings a couple other important qualities, which Vishwanath Chakravarti, I guess Gopit Pranadana and Vridhananda Maharaj, they point out that the name Chitralika means one who is expert in the art of drawing and painting. So not only have you got a friend that's going to be dependable, but this friend's got all the skills to deliver what you need. And as we'll see in the next few verses, she begins to do just that. And of course, not only does she have the skills, but Chitralika knows who all the handsome men in the kingdom and in the creation are, apparently. Now, how she has this information is not gone into, maybe from having been in the court of Parvati or something. But, you know, she seems to know all this, and then we'll, as we'll see, she begins to draw all the different people. It's worth noting over the next few days the reaction from Usha as the different personalities are drawn. But in addition to all those qualities, Chitralika is a great mystic yogini who can fly and kidnap people and bring them to you. So, I mean, what better friend? I mean, you know, this is she can deliver exactly what she promises, you know. So even if you're locked up in a fortress of fire, she'll get them in there. So here again, like we said the other day, this story's got it all. Love, friendship, an overbearing father, restrained daughter, unapproved love for a young man, a huge battle, and then a happy marriage at the end. So this is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these next few verses in this particular chapter, they're very, very nice, and we have a wide range of subject matters and emotions that we can explore in this particular chapter. So as they say, stay tuned. So we'll finish there. If anybody has any questions, comments, corrections, I'll do my best. Sesha Prabhu, my best friend.
Hare Krishna, Chatter out Prabhu. That was a very nice class, thank you. You stressed throughout the class how Usha was locked up. Of course, we know in like the Vedic culture, it's not like, you know, we experience here in the West now where there's more free mingling and everything. But is the emphasis really locked up, you know, by Banasura, or was it just more different than what we have, why you stress being locked up?
Well, according to what I saw in the Vishnu Purana, she's locked up. It's not like she's just kept in a very chaste situation and protected. It's a fortress of fire. Banasura is pretty concerned that she's really attracting a lot of suitors and he doesn't want to take any chances. And so for some reason, which I would love to be able to sit down with somebody that knew the fuller details than I do on this and kind of delve into this, but yeah, she's...
best presented in Vishnu Purana. Like that.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of a Rapunzel kind of scenario.
Thank you.
Jirakamji?
Concerning Chitralika being artistic, seeing she had mystical powers in moving and bringing people from anywhere, it seems the artistic quality might also come from mystical powers too, because she could probably paint anyone from anywhere in the universe.
Quite possible. But yeah, she would have had to have known them to draw a connection there.
Yeah. Well, through the mystic power, she would be able to maybe see them and everything.
That's true. If you've got the power to fly on the wind and bring people with you here and there, and I mean, you know, drawing a face probably isn't going to be that difficult of a task. Anyone else? All right, we'll finish up. Yes, Jim Master.
usually with pastimes, there's something that we can garner from it that helps us in our spiritual life. And I'm scratching my head on this one. What?
Well, as I mentioned, we can take the examples you just got. What are you hankering for? What is our hankering? And then we can also take the focus and enthusiasm she has to achieve that and apply that to ourselves. I mean, can we take this exact story as it is and say, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do to get my husband? Well, probably not, you know. But at the same time, we can take the example of focus and motivation and direction that's there and apply that to our devotional lives, which is really true with most of the Bhagavatam. There's not a lot of one-on-one, just take it and apply it directly to your life examples in the Bhagavatam. Many of them, we have to take the qualities of these great devotees that are being discussed and apply those to our circumstance. So, yeah, I see it's completely applicable. I mean, it may be about, you know, what it's about, but we can clearly apply that to our path of devotion service. That's my two cents. Mata Mate?
One thing was about application that struck me was you're mentioning the same point about what is our hankering. But in this situation, it was her friend who helped her. And so I wanted you to say something about how, for our devotional life, what does it mean to have a friend to help us to fulfill our dreams? And that's one of the application I was thinking you were talking about it. So I thought it would be nice to hear from you.
Well, in real estate, they have three things that are important: location, location, location. And in devotional service, there's three things that are important: association, association, association. So we have to have the association of other devotees. Prabhupada very famously makes that common. If we think we can become Krishna conscious without the association of devotees, we're living in a hallucination. Hallucinations are usually end less favorably than they're endured. So, you know, we have to have the association. And as in the exchange between Usha and Chitraleka, that particular closeness between friends gives the facility for assisting each other in that devotional development. Because the friends will know the mindset, will know the strengths, will know the weaknesses, will still encourage, will take the person as is, but at the same time, give that encouragement. So, you know, these are social traits which we have as a human being, you know, to have those kind of interactions with people. So, particularly so in the process of devotional service, we have to have our good friends. They're the ones that are going to keep us in line. They're the ones that are going to slap us upside the head when we need it and going to give us the encouraging boost when we need that too. They're the ones that will, you know, be there when we have our doubts and at the same time be there to celebrate our successes. You know, this is what friendship and devotional service is about. You know, it's externally, it's not that much different than friendship in the material world. But internally, it's what gives us the ability to continue in the path of Krishna consciousness. Because on our own, we just can't do it. It's just not possible. There's too many circumstances, too many obstacles, too many questions, and therefore we have to have someone to help us get through that. And of course, if we're married, that someone's the spouse, husband, or wife. But beyond that even, there's a deeper friendship that develops with someone that's your, you know, companion. You know, someone that's like, you know, your best bud. At least that's my two cents. Another question?
It seems like in this pastime that Chitraleka, you know, she was a real good friend to Usha, because even though Usha was a little bit away from the normal rules and regulations that were set for her life, and so I was just thinking that a real friend, even though, like in devotional service, a real friend, even though maybe one is not always completely on the mark, so to say, according to our laws, so a real good friend shares that, or you can share it with a real good friend, and that real good friend is also keeping you on track at the same time. So Chitraleka and Usha, they seem to have that kind of relationship.
Yeah, that's one of those 12 qualities of friendship, you know, to be able to, you know, have that kind of exchange. All right, we have to finish here, way over the time. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.